Welcome to the Thrive with Holistic Healing Co. podcast. I am your host, Namita Mahanama. Here, I bring you the synergistic utilization of Western and Eastern modalities to help you thrive in your wellness, to thrive in your mental health, to thrive in life, so that you can feel and be your best self in body, mind, and soul. Thank you for joining me. So, let's jump in together and thrive. So hello and welcome to episode 24 of the Thrive with Holistic Healing Co. podcast. I'm so incredibly grateful that you're here. And today I have the beautiful Gail Cahoon from The Nesting Hub, and she is an endorsed midwife. And it was an amazing interview that I had with her. I got lots of information from her, and I was able to ask all sorts of questions that I'd always been burning to ask a midwife. So it was a beautiful time that we had together. And so just a brief bio about Gail. She is an endorsed midwife and a clinical educator at The Nesting Hub. Now, that is a holistic, family-centered, individualized pregnancy, birth, and postnatal service that is based on the northern beaches of Sydney. As an experienced and passionate midwife, educator, and researcher, she has a career that spans 24 years, both in her homeland of Scotland and for the past 10 years here in Australia. She has an amazing accent that I could hear her talking all day long. So with her knowledge and experience in all aspects of prenatal birthing and postnatal care in both hospital and home settings and across public and private services, Gail understands that every woman, every birthing person, couple, pregnancy, birth, and postnatal journey is different. And as a midwife, she plays an integral part in providing safe, holistic, and effective evidence-based midwifery care, along with support, advocacy, education, empowerment, and understanding across the continuum. And so in the show notes, there's a list of her credentials and her exact direct website. So www.thenestinghub.com.au. You can find her on social media, on Instagram as well. And all of the resources, all of the websites, the books, the podcasts, all of those that she mentioned in this episode, I have linked in the show notes, or they're listed in the show notes where you definitely can read on further. They're all sites and resources and books that she recommends from all of her amazing experience. So I really do hope that you get a lot out of today's episode. I certainly enjoyed recording it with Gail, and I hope that you take away some wonderful pearls, whether it's for pre-pregnancy, whether it's for your pregnancy journey, whether it's for the postpartum journey, the birthing process, the concept and understanding of perhaps different models of midwifery care that exists here in Australia. And I hope that it shines the light on a whole new aspect and topic that you might be interested in. So enjoy. Hello, Gail. So I'm so excited to have you on here today. How are you feeling?
I'm fine. Thank you, Namita. How are you?
You're good. Good. It's so good to, have you on screen and to speak with you live, which is fantastic. And so I just wanted to, I guess, give you the opportunity to introduce yourself. So who is Gail?
Gail is an endorsed midwife living on the northern beaches of Sydney. I have been a midwife since January 1998, so quite some time. Started off life in Scotland, just outside Edinburgh, and worked there as a midwife until 2012, when we then migrated to Adelaide and my husband and two girls moved there in July 2012. Was there for almost 4 years, and then Sydney came calling in January 2016, and that's what brought me here. I have worked across my career in both hospital and community. Most of the hospital, although I was a rotational midwife, I focused very much on birthing unit. Absolutely love being at that adrenaline rushing labour and birth stage and being with couples when they become families, which is really what drives me. And I'm also very passionate about education, and I have been a clinical educator over the last few years, continued on my studies from midwifery into clinical education, and finished a master's in clinical education in 2020, just after the start of the pandemic. So I'm really quite passionate about educating and supporting the next generation of midwives. I look on that as a bit of a legacy, I guess, for carrying on where I leave off.
Yes. No, that's amazing. And I have to say, during our infant massage training together, I saw you shine with your training and your explaining and your teaching. So in our little exercises that we had, I very much used to enjoy, your explanations. I feel like you're a natural educator.
It was absolutely fantastic to cross paths with you then, Namita.
Yes.
And I feel very blessed to have continued on that relationship. And thank you very much for inviting me to be part of this today.
Oh, it's amazing. I'm so happy that you're here. And I definitely felt your passion in midwifery. And I felt like, you know, it was something that wasn't just a job for you. It was something that really brought you so much joy and meaning.
I think it very much is a calling, and I have absolutely loved it. Obviously, there's ups and downs, and with the COVID pandemic, certainly it's been very challenging for us as healthcare professionals, but in trying to provide the best care and support for those that cross our path as well.
Yes, amazing. And so how would you explain what that impact has been for new families?
Well, I think at the beginning of the pandemic, and none of us really knew what that landscape was going to look like and or how long that was actually going to continue on for, it was very difficult, and we didn't know what policies and protocols would be required. Would there be vaccinations? What limitations would we have in that pregnancy, labour, birth and postnatal journey to help and support those families and couples? At the beginning, I would say we had lots of women birthing on their own without partners being there, without second support people being there. And that was a very difficult landscape for us to be part of, and we were just heartbroken for the couples and families that were having to go through bringing new life into the world in a very uncertain world. I also felt, I guess, it was quite difficult that we were all in our full PPE. You know, these babies were being born into the world, and the first sight they were seeing was everybody wearing masks. Mums included at the beginning, us wearing goggles, our gowns and our gloves and everything like that. It was not really what we ever envisaged childbearing to be. But I think what it did do is it brought us all together very nicely and made us all work collaboratively for the greater good, to help and support those couples and families at that time. We're still going through that, and we're still having to navigate that and creating an ever-evolving policy and protocol for every situation. But I think there is a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel, and we have supported and cared for those people as best as we could with what we had available to us at that time.
Yes, definitely. And I guess from an outside perspective, because I didn't deliver any of my children during the pandemic, I would imagine that there perhaps may be extra, say, birth trauma or, you know, certain anxieties or layers that might exist birthing in the pandemic. So is that something that you saw in your own experience as a midwife?
Yes, definitely. I mean, we know anyway that, you know, 1 in 5 women will develop depression or anxiety at some point throughout that perinatal journey. And 1 in 10, you know, partners as well. So we've always known that, but we definitely do believe that that is on the increase. And the perinatal mental health support services have fed that back to us, that they are inundated with inquiries. And certainly for us as healthcare professionals, hoping for our women and birthing persons and couples to be supported in that perinatal mental health space, it has been difficult. There have been long wait times to be seen. And of course, that has added degree of stress and anxiety to us, I think, as well, as healthcare professionals, because we want to make sure that the support services are in place at the earliest convenience for the couples and for the families.
Yes. And what has your process looked like in terms of where or what do you do with your patients and mothers and families who birth with you?
I guess I'm quite fortunate as a private practicing endorsed midwife. I have my own practice now, which allows me to provide that continuity of midwifery care, which we know the research tells us that that helps in that reducing the level of anxiety and depression with those that are journeying with us. Because you're seeing these people, you know, so often throughout their pregnancy, you're there with them when they're birthing their baby. You have a really good understanding of them and their background and on into that postnatal journey as well. So the nesting hub for me, which is my private practice, I'm hoping it has helped people along the way during the COVID pandemic in that continuity of midwifery care and offering home birthing services as well, meaning that people have the choice to birth their babies in their own home environment where they feel safe and supported and heard.
Yes, absolutely. And then this continued midwifery concept is something that I really love. And when we met for coffee that time and we were chatting about that, that was something that really, even in the book that I published, was one of the points that really stood out, was that if we had continued care by the same health professional, whether it's throughout pregnancy and the post-birth period, that really can help women to just be themselves and not feel scared of perhaps, you know, what might happen if they're honest. And I definitely know with my midwife in Cairns, there was no hiding the fact that I was not well at the time. So when I saw her, I just broke into tears because I had that rapport with her and I hadn't established that with any child health nurses that came through my home, whilst that should be an intimate kind of relationship or someone's entering your house. But it was only seeing my beautiful midwife that I just let it all hang out. So you said you hope you've helped women. I know that you have, my goodness. Definitely would have. Michelle.
Thank you.
And so I wanted to ask you, what is the best thing that you love about midwifery? What's the thing you love most?
I guess being with women, with birthing people, and seeing couples become families and providing that continuity of care across the continuum, I really feel is the thing I love most. That's probably not one specific thing, but I just, it's such a poignant, you know, special time in a family's life. And I feel very blessed to actually, and privileged to be part of this profession.
Yes, absolutely. And in what sort of time period after birth can that continued midwifery care continue for? Is there a set time?
Well, there's lots of different models out there. The private practicing endorsed midwife model that I have at the Nesting Hub is from pregnancy, quite quite early on often, you know, 2-3 weeks pregnant. Sometimes women will reach out to me and then continue on throughout their pregnancy, their labour and birth journey, and then postnatally daily for 4 days if they would like that. And I do provide an individualised service. So if people who have had babies before, had experience with children before, they might not need or want all of the services that I offer, and that's absolutely fine. But I offer daily postnatal visits for the first 4 days, then day 6, day 10, day 14, then 2 weeks beyond that at 4 weeks postpartum, and then again at 6 weeks postpartum. And that's usually when I round off that care journey. It's a very emotional final visit, I have to say, when you've been with couples and families for 10 and a half months sometimes. It's very difficult to say goodbye.
Yes, absolutely. I can imagine you would have established a beautiful bond in that time. In what capacity can you help, or can a midwife help with breastfeeding or any kind of lactation challenges that might present in that postpartum period?
Yes, well, I think getting things right is critical in the early days. So I think that's why I offer the daily visits for the first 4 days, to try and help and support them at their most vulnerable time with breastfeeding. There are many midwives out there that are also lactation consultants. I don't have that certification yet. However, I do know many that do, and I'm happy to then refer the couples to another lactation consultant in our locality. But as a midwife, you know, since 1998, I have a bit of experience in breastfeeding, and I'm very passionate about it, and I'm more than happy to help and support in whatever way that I can.
Yes. Okay, fantastic. And are there other health professionals or other people in your group that you would often refer your families to? What sort of services do you refer typically?
Yes. Well, I've always provided a very holistic approach to my midwifery care. So in pregnancy, I certainly inform couples and families about what offerings there are. So things such as women's health physio, osteos, chiros, acupuncturists, psychologists, counsellors as well, thinking about the anxiety and depression that can exist with these couples and families. And anything and everything, you know, Chinese herbalists, reflexologists, and also, obviously, childbirth education, which initially with the Nesting Hub, prior to my endorsement, that was what the Nesting Hub was. So I started childbirth education classes and transitioned to parenthood classes. I then incorporated the infant massage after we did our weekend workshop together. And also perinatal mental health support services and bereavement counselling services as well. So that was initially what the Nesting Hub was. And then following endorsement, was able to add that clinical component right the way through the continuum. I do value the importance of that holistic approach, and do certainly pass on lots of information, lots of resources, encourage couples and families to read around topics, to be fully informed, to then allow them to make informed choices about the maternity care that can be provided for them.
Yes, fantastic. And what about services or health professionals like GPs,
yep,
like blood tests, and how does that work?
Yes, well, as endorsed midwives, it is a requirement, a legal requirement from our midwifery registering body, APRA, and also for our insurance at MIGA, to make sure that we do collaborate with other people. And I think, you know, providing that collaborative model is imperative. Really, I think we have to keep the lines of communication open. Communication is very important, and making sure that we can care and support the couples and families that we are journeying with. So From a Medicare rebate perspective, couples can get a Medicare rebate from the services that endorsed midwives can provide. We do need to be journeying with a collaborating obstetrician, and we also need to have a GP referral letter as well to enable that rebate to happen. So as a financial thing, it's important to work with GPs and work with obstetricians, but also from a legal perspective, it's appropriate to do so. And I think just that collaboration and communication and us all working together to support the couples and the families better is imperative.
Yes, fantastic. And I didn't actually realize that you needed to collaborate with an obstetrician. So is that if during the birthing process something were to arise that they're on call or on hand as well?
So at any point in someone's journey, from them first engaging with me until that 6 weeks post-birth, things can happen. You know, women can start off low risk and then become higher risk. And so sometimes we do need to reach out to that GP and that collaborating obstetrician and other services like endocrinologists if women maybe became diabetic, had thyroid problems, or haematologists if they had any concerns with their blood, etc. So it's really important to actually have that. It doesn't necessarily mean that they need to be integral to that woman's care. I would still be the lead professional in that woman's care if she chose to journey with a private practicing endorsed midwife. But if there was anything that was out with my normal parameters, then I can refer on. And we can consult. So we can call our collaborating obstetrician and GPs up and have a bit of a discussion, but I can still remain as the lead professional in that the birthing person's journey. Or sometimes situations arise where the birthing person becomes higher risk, and then the care can be transferred to a hospital environment where they are managed there. So I need to be seen to be engaging with these people, and they need to know about them, but I don't need to involve them in all of their care, just really if there was anything of concern. We have a national guideline for consultation and referral, which is an Australian College of Midwives referral process. And that allows us really to identify when it's appropriate to continue on the journey 100% with me, when it would be appropriate to reach out to others. And it can even be my colleagues. It doesn't necessarily have to be going up the tree to the obstetrician or the GP. It can just be with my colleague, depending on what the situation is. And the national guidelines for consultation and referral allow us as endorsed midwives to follow that pathway through. And then, yes, if the birthing partner becomes higher risk, then we can refer on.
Sure. Yes, no, that makes sense. And do you find that a lot of families come to you wanting to have a VBAC, or I've only just learned this term, HVAC? I didn't know that that existed, but so I had a VBAC with my second boy, and that was something I really wanted to do, and I was able to do that, and I felt very empowered and wonderful after that. So I would imagine, you know, that there would be many other women in the same position.
Yes, definitely. And I mean, I guess it depends on the circumstance that led to the cesarean section last time, as to whether it would be appropriate for them to have the HB, the home birth after cesarean, the HBAC, or to have a vaginal birth after cesarean and birth in the hospital system, which as endorsed midwives, we can equally support as well. Whether the woman chooses to birth at home or in the hospital, she can still journey with an endorsed midwife. There are just certain circumstances where we can continue on that care journey you have to have visiting rights at a hospital to enable you to carry out all of the clinical work that you're doing in that home environment within the hospital system. And that's purely a hospital insurance policy. I have visiting rights at Westmead Hospital on the outskirts of Sydney, and that is absolutely fantastic. So I can continue on that care journey with women and couples that I'm journeying with. And we can then, throughout our journey together, work out whether a home birth would be safe. And generally speaking, if a woman has laboured before her cesarean, that can be a real positive in having a home birth after cesarean. And if, for me, I feel I would like the woman to have had about 2 years from the cesarean section to birthing her next baby, so that healing, that 2 year healing and on that uterus has actually happened. And we obviously need to make sure, and as with everybody that actually journeys in home birthing, to have a booking at a hospital as well, so that a transfer could be initiated should a need arise for anybody.
Yes.
But obviously we have to be mindful of somebody who's hoping for a vaginal birth, that they are at a slightly increased risk of complications happening. So we just have to do that risk assessment and have that discussion and collaboration and just make sure that it's going to be safe for them to do so. I've been very fortunate this year and have supported a woman myself in the nesting pub through vaginal birth, HBAC, home birth after cesarean. And it was an absolutely beautiful experience for myself and for them, and to be surrounded by their family and for everything to have gone really well was just beautiful.
Amazing. No, I can definitely appreciate how wonderful that would be. Now, what would you tell a mother who is about to start a family very soon?
I think it's really important to prepare the body and the mind for what lies ahead. I think to read around this subject, to listen to podcasts, read lots of books, think about evidence-based practice, explore the different models of maternity care, but also get them into a fit and healthy state themselves to enable that pregnancy to be achieved. So making sure they are healthy, quitting smoking, ceasing alcohol consumption, cutting down on caffeine, eating a really well-balanced diet, taking multivitamins, things like prenatal vitamins with folate in them to help, you know, baby's development. Iodine as well is a really good one, and iron too. To achieve a pregnancy, you need to be in a very, very healthy state. And so I think it's important to educate people on things that they can do to enhance the possibility and holding on to that pregnancy as well.
Yes, absolutely. And anything additional that you would add during their pregnancy? So when they've actually fallen pregnant, any additional advice?
I think a lot of that still really is included within the whole pregnancy thing. I still want people to exercise well, keep a healthy diet, get plenty of rest, and keep up with those multivitamins because they're growing a baby. And, you know, like babies take a lot from the mum. So it's really good that they maintain their own nutrition and vitamin supplementation. Making sure they're drinking plenty of water as well and getting that exercise. And also not just preparing their body, but preparing their mind for the journey ahead.
And are there any particular tools or ways that a mother can prepare mentally for this journey?
I guess journeying with a continuity of care midwife in a midwifery group practice or as a private midwife can certainly help in that regard. We're seeing these people consistently a lot, and we get to understand them and their journey to pregnancy and birth and beyond. So certainly do a lot of education along with the clinical components that I do in my daily work. There is a degree of education carried out then. And as I said earlier, making sure that, you know, those people are well read and, you know, they're listening to this, they're looking at things like the Raising Children's Network, also knowing that there are support services out there for them as well in that perinatal mental health space, so that mentally, psychologically, spiritually, they are in sync with what's happening to them. And it's an ever-changing landscape when you're pregnant and growing a baby.
Yes, definitely. And what advice would you have for the partner, a non-birthing partner? How best can they support, this whole process?
I think them knowing all of that is very important too. And most of the couples who journey with me do actually have appointments where the partners are there as well. So they're hearing an awful lot of what I'm actually saying, which I think is really good. There's also lots of support services out there for partners as well. I'm just thinking about dads. I know that there's different partners, not necessarily just dads, but I know that SMS for Dads is a very good resource, and that's smsfordads.com.au, I think. And on that website, it actually gives them lots of different support services and also a little bit of an education outlet for them called Beer and Bubs. I don't know if you've ever heard of that, Namita. That has proven quite popular over the last few years. Obviously, with COVID, it brought things a bit challenging, and a lot of support and education was initiated online. But I think there are a few of these support services that are actually face-to-face now, which is really great. So yes, I think journeying together and us all being there at the one time, and for them hearing and seeing what is going on with their partner, I think it is integral to that.
Yes, definitely. In terms of, say, a mother that wants to birth within the hospital environment, mm-hmm. how can she still make that experience her own or unique?
Yeah, I think normal and physiological labour and birth can be achieved in the hospital system. It's achieved every day in the hospital system. I think as midwives, that's what we hope will be achieved for the people that journey with us. And that's not just us as endorsed midwives. That's across my whole career. That's really what you hope for the people journeying with you. Circumstances sometimes prevent that from happening, but I think we can still create such a beautiful environment in the hospital system. So I guess dimming the lights, because we know that that can be really good for the progression of labour and birth, creating a nice, relaxed atmosphere. We can do that wherever. We can dim those lights. We can have little battery-operated candles. We can have water, whether it's from the shower, whether it's from a pool in the room. Many of our birthing units have birthing pools in them, which is really great. So we can push the beds to the back of the room, and we can put floor mats out on the floor. We can have birthing balls and ropes, lots of things that women can use to adopt optimal maternal positioning, because we know that that facilitates the descent of babies and allows them to get into that really good position for labour and birth. Yes. So we can create that, whether that's in the home environment or the hospital environment.
Yes, amazing. And a partner in that hospital environment, how can they best support a birthing mother?
Mm-hmm. Well, through the course of our pregnancy, through the childbirth education that is done, and from us as endorsed midwives doing a lot of optimal maternal positioning education, We teach about hip squeezes and about counter pressure and about the importance of acupressure and massage. So the partners can get really involved, and we do encourage that in the pregnancy, so that they have a little bit of a practice before the big day arrives.
Yes. No, that's fantastic. And any mother that I guess is soon to give birth that might be feeling a bit frightened or unsure about what to expect, what advice would you give her?
I think just trying to keep as relaxed as she can, doing some meditations, massage. Pregnancy massage is absolutely fantastic. Just as long as she's not lying completely flat on her back, we can still do pregnancy massage. And I think keeping that positive mindset is really important. I think believing that you and your body can do this, your body was made for this, and you and your baby will work together to achieve that wonderful goal. So I think keeping the positivity flowing is important. Doing meditations to engage with your baby so you have that relationship built up before you then go into labour and birth. So we do a lot of preparation of the mindset throughout our journey as endorsed midwives. When women are labouring and birthing in their home environment, it's really important, and even in the hospital, that really important that they are not fit, not just physically prepared, but mentally, emotionally, spiritually prepared as well.
Yes, amazing. No, and I love that. I love that, you know, you hold a woman in all those aspects. I feel that we're not just one. We're not one aspect alone.
Yes.
It's important. And what would you say to a mother that may feel birth disappointment? Say it didn't go according to what she wished, and not that it escalates to anxiety and depression, but, you know, a real genuine feeling of disappointment. What would you tell her?
I think, yeah, speaking to them and finding out really why they're feeling that, what has led to that, can allow us to navigate going forward and whether I am the best person to support her and them in that space, or whether it would be best for someone else to do that. We always do a bit of a birth debrief. I think it's really important to do that. And it can actually bring up some beautiful moments as well, which is really lovely. But of course, there will be some negatives in that space. But wholeheartedly, in the home birthing this year, the birth debrief has been really beautiful. But I think it's really important to ask the birthing person and also the birthing partner how they have felt about that experience. So when I go on day one, that's usually part of the care that I provide, is actually to just allow them the time to pick apart what happened yesterday, you know, and do they have any questions? Sometimes when you're in the throes of labour, there are times where you're maybe not 100% sure. Did that happen? Did I imagine that? So it's really good to actually hear our perspective as well. They quite often will say, was this your experience? This was my experience. And I think it's that two-way communication. It just allows them to convey their thoughts and feelings. And if there is anything of concern, then it's thinking about, you know, what we can do to help and support them going forward. If it was in the hospital system and something happened, I guess bringing together everybody that was involved in that labour and birth journey would be really good, so that everybody can speak openly about it. And then thinking about the support services, as we mentioned earlier, the Gidget Foundation, Panda, and COPE, etc., would be fantastic in that space. There have been quite a lot of women and birthing people who have journeyed with me that have had anxiety and depression. So they have already been engaged with the perinatal support services, or they have the therapist, the counsellor, the perinatal psychologist. So I think it's really good to, if they feel like they're struggling, to be able to reach out to these people again and to be seen in a timely manner. We do know that continuity of midwifery care that is provided from like an MGP programme or from us as private midwives is definitely beneficial in that space. We understand them and their journey to labour and birth and can then support them better, I think, in that postnatal journey as parents.
And what would you tell a mum about the postpartum period?
Postpartum period. Well, for her, it's probably a bit of a tiring time and an emotional time. The hormones that were all flying high in pregnancy come crashing down, certainly around that day three, day four. So I always very much encourage them to be prepared for that. And also to just, you know that the support is out there and encourage other people in their midst to be able to support them, whether that's physical support, mental, emotional, psychological support, support from the partners, family, friends. I think it's also really important, though, certainly in the early postnatal days, that the couple have an opportunity to bond with their baby and to spend that time as a family before anybody and everybody is coming their way. So I do encourage that as an endorsed midwife. And I'm obviously doing those daily postnatal visits in the first few days to help and support the new mum and a new family in that landscape. Getting sleep, I think, is crucial. So sleeping when the baby sleeps, I think, is very good advice. I myself didn't take that advice when I had my first baby, and I kind of regretted that because it is very tiring and your body is still doing an awful lot of work, especially when you're breastfeeding. So yeah, sleep, I think, for the new mum, but also for the new dad, is critical.
Sorry to interrupt your Thrive podcast. I just wanted to hop on quickly to talk about my holistichealingco.com platform. I have created a website with blogs, links to videos on YouTube, all of the podcast episodes and show notes, as well as a shop to purchase my books, guided meditations, and other products. It continues to grow and evolve, containing information from a pharmacist perspective, as well as from an Eastern Ayurveda perspective. Jump on, and I hope you find some resources to help you thrive. Now, back to the episode. Yes. And speaking of a new dad, what are some ways that you have seen in your families that dads or non-birthing partners have supported the mother in that postpartum journey?
In that postpartum journey, I think because, as I said, as throughout the time in the nesting hub, and partners have been integral to the visits, and we've all built up a rapport and an understanding with one another, and they've had that education and, you know, they've followed that journey. They are very much invested in supporting and caring for the new mum. And so when it comes to looking after the family, they continue on very well with that, in my experience. And they get very good in the kitchen. They make lots of nutritious foods. And I always say to them in that late antenatal period about the first 40 days book, which is absolutely incredible. And that is just, you know, to nourish in all ways, not just physically nourish, but in every way, the new mum. And on their journey to motherhood and parenthood. I think having that mental and emotional support as well. It is really critical. It's a very different landscape to just being a couple and to doing your own thing and to just needing to think about your two selves, to then all of a sudden have to be putting someone else first. And in the early days, you know, babies can be quite demanding, and just, I think, preparing them for that and knowing that they're not alone and that we're all there to help and support them in that space, I think is crucial.
Yes, absolutely. And so say you went into a family's home, so say at that 4-week checkup, and you felt that there were signs of anxiety and depression, we'll say from the mother. In that instance, what would you tell them?
Yeah, I think we'd have a chat. I probably would be doing that at, I would be doing that at every visit anyway, and would certainly be able to pick up if there's any concerns in any way. But yes, at 4 weeks post-birth, I would be having that chat with them, asking them individually how they're feeling, I think, as well. It's not always a united thing. You know, one may be having more challenges than the other partner. So I think it's really important to work out where both are coming from to be able to support them better. Obviously, with having been a midwife for many years, I have came across this very often. So do have a little, you know, bit of skill and tools in my toolkit to assist them with that. But also I'm appreciative that there are other professionals that can do that better than I. And so I would encourage them to reach out to the Gidget Foundation, gidgetfoundation.org.au on their website. There's also PANDA, which is the Perinatal Anxiety and Depression Australia support as well, and that is panda.org.au. COPE as well. COPE, the Centre for Perinatal Excellence, has lots of resources on their website as well, and I think that's cope.org.au as well. And of course, you still have other support services for anxiety and depression, such as Beyond Blue, Lifeline, perinatal psychologists as well. I work very closely with them and do have a few numbers that if I feel couples are struggling and challenged in that space, then I can, you know, reach out to perinatal psychologists as well. I think getting that addressed in a timely manner is appropriate. So that would really be my pathway. But I think initially I would have that discussion with them myself and see how I can help to better support them as well. Also offering things like, although I'll say I'll do a postnatal visit at 4 weeks and then at 6 weeks, I can increase those visits to better support them, and I'm more than happy to do that. And also to do an Edinburgh postnatal depression score, I think that's really critical as well. We do those scorings in pregnancy, and we can do them again postnatally if we feel there is a need to do that.
Yes, absolutely. And I guess in terms of logistical advice, so say they are, you know, they're just trying to keep their head above water, for instance, you know, I guess if when you're entering their home, I mean, for me, if I was to reflect at the time, it would have been so beautiful if someone just said to me that everything else can wait. Whereas I felt that pressure to, you know, I still need to operate at a level that, you know, I was still trying to heal and recover physically, but also I had biochemical imbalances. So I guess in that space, when you're in their home, what, I guess, realistic or life advice would you give a family going through postnatal anxiety and depression?
I think just being open and communicative in that space, and also being appreciative that everybody experiences it differently. So it's not a one size fits all. everybody navigates this differently and in a different way at a different rate. And it is a bit of a moving landscape. And we have to keep evaluating that and making sure, is this actually the best for this couple, for this family at this specific time? And also what has led to the anxiety and depression as well? And is there anything else? You know, has there been challenges from a breastfeeding perspective, which has increased those anxieties? So we could reach out to the Australian Breastfeeding Association. Tresillian are absolutely fantastic in that perinatal postpartum space. You know, so it's to know that there are lots of other places that people can get that support is crucial. With COVID, it has been very difficult because there's not been so much face-to-face interaction with people. So, and also, like I say, with the anxiety and depression, definitely on the increase, trying to access those services has definitely been more challenging for us as healthcare professionals, but also for the couples. I think it's always just like wrapping our arms around them and letting them know that they're not alone and that we can help and support them in whatever way possible at any given time.
Yes. No, that's amazing. And I will link all of these organizations that you're listing in the show notes because they're all valuable resources. And I also wanted to speak into sleep deprivation. So I remember with a newborn, I thought I would never sleep again in my life. And that felt very daunting. And so what advice do you have for a new family that are just exhausted?
I think sleep is definitely required, and I think support from other people to enable that to happen is definitely required, whether that is support from family, friends, you know, like if family are coming round to see the new family, can they look after baby for a little while and allow the new parents to go to bed? I think it is critical to actually do that. With anxiety and depression, a lot of the couples have reported that sleep deprivation plays a huge factor in that. It fogs your judgment. It makes it more difficult to make decisions. And before you know it, you can be on a slippery slope. So sleep is critical. The Sleep Well Baby app from Tresillian is absolutely fantastic, and I do support that and pass that on to the people that journey with me. And also the Wonder Weeks app as well. That's a really good postnatal one as well. And it just can allow you to understand a little bit of, you know, when the baby's awake, when the baby's asleep, why would the baby be wanting to feed a lot now? Why is the baby, you know, not wanting to sleep now? That can certainly help you to navigate. The Raising Children's Network is absolutely phenomenal in that space and giving you lots of tips and tricks for sleep as well. And of course, there are sleep consultants out there. There's people out there right way around Sydney, worldwide, who are specialists in that space. So like we spoke about, you know, reaching out to lactation consultants and chiros and acupuncturists and everything, it's really good to, you know, to perhaps think about a sleep consultant if there are some challenges with your baby sleeping. What in that continuity of care that is provided by us in that postnatal period as midwives, then we can certainly give a few pointers on sleeping techniques and wrapping, unwrapping, whatever, you know, bearing in mind that every baby is different, every journey is different. Some babies like to be wrapped, some babies like to be free to sleep. So we can help to navigate that and support in that feeding journey as well, because sometimes those babies that are not sleeping may have other things that are maybe causing them some concern. Sometimes babies have a little bit of a misalignment in their pelvis as they navigate down the birth canal, and, you know, chiros and osteos can actually help in that space, make the baby more comfortable to enable them to sleep. So I guess it's a bit of a, you know, we do a Q&A and, you know, and have that level of understanding from the communication with the couples and see how we navigate that best going forward, depending on their particular circumstance.
Yes, no, that's amazing. Yes, fantastic. And moving, I guess, to the physical recovery of birth, what sort of advice would you have for a woman recovering from a vaginal delivery?
Mm-hmm. I guess talking about that recovery of the perineal area and the pelvic floor is really important, and starting to get them on that road to recovery from an exercise perspective. So in the first few days, I send information about restoring your pelvic floor and also speaking to couples about women's health physios and the importance of getting that recovery. And also doing that assessment, you know, even if someone has had a cesarean section, they have still had the weight of a pregnancy placed upon their pelvic floor. A lot of people out there think, you've had a cesarean section, there's no risk to my pelvic floor. But when you've carried a baby for 9 months, there's a definite risk to your pelvic floor. And I think to have that pelvic assessment is really good. Obviously, for myself as an endorsed midwife who has been at that home birth, say, if there has been some perineal trauma, whether they've been sutured, whether they haven't been sutured, I think it's appropriate to still be doing those daily checks, make sure there are signs of healing there. And if there are any concerns, such as a prolapse, that we can actually engage with someone sooner to aid that recovery faster.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. And so say there's no sign of pelvic floor imbalance, are there any other advice that they can help to not speed up the healing, but to encourage healing?
Absolutely. We encourage ice in the first few days, certainly. That can be really good. Women can also choose some anti-inflammatory medications that can certainly help as well. Keeping mobile as well. A lot of women may think that, you know, resting that area is actually good, but actually keeping moving, getting the blood circulating, you know, keeping hydrated, well nourished, keeping a high fiber diet going to encourage everything to move along. All of that is very good in that healing process.
And after a cesarean, what are some other considerations for the recovery there?
Yes, well, we have to be a little bit more gentle because they have a scar on their uterus and they had an open wound that was then sutured. So that needs to be given the time to heal. They are still encouraged to move. Movement is very good to prevent deep vein thrombosis, etc. It's very important to encourage that movement and to enable them to be comfortable for them to move, because it can be a little bit more uncomfortable for those that have had major abdominal surgery. So we have to be mindful of that. But definitely, they can still do exercise. We do suggest that within that first 6 week period, you know, they need to take greater care. And then beyond that, they can slowly step up. So I have a little bit of an exercise program that they can then engage with to aid their recovery. But I think reaching out to the women's health physio is very good in that space. And yeah, chiros and osteos and core floor restore is absolutely fantastic. I don't know if you've heard of that. A lot of our women are very, very much into Instagram, etc. So they'll listen to podcasts and engage with all of these things, sometimes before we even suggest them, which is absolutely fantastic, that they feel empowered They want to be in control of their health and well-being, which is just fantastic.
Yes, no, that's amazing. And what strategies would you advise a new family in terms of entering new motherhood and familyhood and still trying to look after themselves? So we've spoken about sleep and nutrition and exercise, but what else? What else have you seen, I guess, other families incorporate that you have seen the benefits of it enabling them to manage the transition perhaps smoothly?
I think having other support out there, I think having family and friends and not necessarily coming and doing any care provision, but dropping off food, nutritious foods for the new family can be absolutely fantastic. If the partner doesn't need to think about what he or she are required to do from a food perspective, then it can allow them to spend more time as a family, to bond, and for them to support their partner better as well.
Yes. And speaking of bonding with the baby, so say new parents are finding it perhaps a little bit harder to bond with the baby, are there certain things that you've seen to help with bonding and attachment?
I think spending that time together is critical in the early days. And certainly as endorsed midwives, where we're going in those first few early days of parenthood, just giving them a few little pointers and encouraging that rest and everything. I think reaching out to other people who have children as well, I think, is really important. You know, how did other people navigate this? Listening to all of those podcasts, how did other people navigate this postnatal journey? There are so many podcasts out there which are absolutely fantastic. To just know that you're not alone in this journey can be helpful to people's headspace, because sometimes they feel, oh my gosh, am I the only one going through this? But to know that they're not alone makes all the difference, I think, to them. I do definitely encourage very early on in our journey together to be well read and well researched, so that can empower you to make informed choices and decisions upon the care that is going to be provided for you. I think that is incredible. And also to allow you to make decisions such as, you know, vaccinations for your baby, vitamin K for your baby, things like that. It's really important to understand all of those landscapes to enable you to make that decision. So at the beginning, I usually bring along a book just to get things started. And before I know it, everybody is very well read. They bring a lot of questions to our antenatal visits and postnatal visits, which is absolutely fantastic, and I encourage them to do so. I do say to them about the works of Ina May Gaskin. Sarah Wickham is absolutely fantastic, Dr. Sarah Wickham, Dr. Rachel Reed, Sarah Buckley, Janet Velasquez, Millie Hill. There's lots of books out there that can help and support couples and new families in that space. And postnatally, a really good one is Dr. Howard Chilton's book, Baby on Board. Absolutely love that book as well. But Ina May Gaskin has lots of publications, pregnancy and breastfeeding and spiritual midwifery, preparing you for a home birth, things like that are really good for couples that are journeying with me, and also for people preparing for a home birth.
Amazing. No, they're all fantastic recommendations. So I will link that in the show notes for sure.
Australian Birth Stories and The Midwife's Cauldron and things like that are all really good to hear, I guess, about, you know, people's experiences. Be that good or bad, I think it's really good to have a listen to them. And that can certainly empower you to make decisions upon the care that is provided.
Yes. No, that's amazing. Now, I also just wanted to ask you, now that, you know, how many years on with you, with your two children and all your years of midwifery experience, what would you tell yourself going into motherhood?
I think to be well informed. I think, you know, as I was a midwife before I had my children, so I guess I was quite informed, but I probably never prepared my husband much for it. I was a midwife, clearly knew what to do, knew how to navigate labour and birth, or so I thought. And he didn't need to do any childbirth education because I was a midwife. But what I realised quite shortly after was that was actually a need for him. He actually wanted to know all of these things. And so we probably should have done the childbirth education and transition to parenthood education so that he was certainly fully prepared for what lay ahead. And that was in the days before podcasts, you know, almost before mobile phones. And so we weren't quite as well read, I think, then. So we've moved in a very different way now. And I like 21st century maternity care, and that couples really do take this seriously and want to know anything and everything, the good, the bad, the ugly. And it is fantastic. And to come to me with a million and one questions is what I would expect and what I absolutely love. And that's what drives me forward, I think. So being well prepared and well read, I think, is probably my take home, so that you can then make the most appropriate decisions for you. And making sure that they choose, I think, the right model of maternity care for them as well. There's many models out there. Sometimes women will go to GPs when they have a positive pregnancy test and the options are not given to them. And that's a bit sad. I think everybody deserves to have every option available to them. And they can then make that informed decision that's right for them. And whether it's hospital or whether it's home, it doesn't matter, as long as you are supported, cared for, respected, and empowered.
Yes, amazing. Yes, all fabulous words. And so just as a final point, where can my listeners find you? And if they want to work with you and want to know all of the services that you have available, what can they do?
They can go online to thenestinghub.com.au, and they can email me at gail@thenestinghub.com.au. They can also call me 0457526277. And my services are also on the Home Birth New South Wales website. So if anybody wants to journey with an endorsed midwife or have a home birth, and it doesn't need to be the home birth, it can also be the hospital birth, then all endorsed midwives details can be found on Home Birth New South Wales, or Home Birth Australia is another one. There's lots of us out there. I think we need many, many more out there. And I hope in the future that we will have much more endorsed midwives to give couples that option should they choose to journey with us. But midwifery group practices, doing that continuity of midwifery care, or whether you want hospital-based care, shared care with a GP, there's lots of options available to you. And I think it's appropriate that women know that and couples know that, so that they can choose what's right for them.
That's amazing. And I think that everything that you stand for is wonderful. I love all that you do. And I enjoy that you're also teaching students and you are really trying to make an impact on the next generation. So I often see your pictures of your students with you, joining you on your home births and all of your adventures that you go on. So I think that's fantastic.
I absolutely love the journey. As I said at the beginning, you know, supporting the next generation of midwives, I feel is a bit of a legacy for me. And I'm just passionate about education as well. So we're working with Western Sydney University students and University of Technology Sydney students has been absolutely fantastic. There have been four of my women this year who have been happy to journey right the way through with students. And what an amazing experience it has actually been for them, for the students, for me as the endorsed midwife supporting them, and for the universities too, to be able to offer that placement for the students has been great. So yeah, I look forward to what 2023 and beyond brings for all of us, I think. But the continuity of midwifery care is definitely fantastic. And to have students able to see that are going to be the next generation, you know, it might then encourage them to do what I do, which just warms my heart.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I wholeheartedly support that so much because I, for one, experienced that continued midwifery care, and you genuinely just feel that connection and that rapport. So it is so incredibly important. And I remember them forever, and I'm sure I, you know, I always will. And I keep their cards that they sent to us. Oh. And it's, you know, the boys have one in each of their rooms, and they're our family. So yes, it's very, very beautiful what you do. And it's such a pleasure to have met you. And I thank you for coming on today.
Thank you so much, Namita. It's fantastic what you do as well. I know you're an ambassador for the Gidget Foundation. Your journey through postnatal depression, navigating the support services, etc., for that has been truly inspiring. And so I thank you as well for the work that you do. And I wish you all the very best in what lies ahead.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Gail. And I will link everything and all the resources that you mentioned today in the notes. And yeah, thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining me today. If you've enjoyed this podcast, it would be so amazing if you could leave a review, subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss a thing. Share this resource and my Holistic Healing Co. website, where you will find all of the episodes and show notes, as well as share my social media to your friends and to all those who would benefit from its content. I hope you have received a beautiful takeaway to help you thrive, and I look so forward to joining you again next week.